Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on The Charlie Kirk Show, we bring you an exclusive and truly an incredibly rare sit-down with the senior advisor to the President of the United States, Jared Kushner. We discuss the historic First Step Act, scrapping NAFTA for the new and improved USMCA, and his plan to completely overhaul our immigration system. We'll also bring you an update from the Iowa State Fair with all the gaffes, shenanigans, and bad ideas brought to you courtesy of the Democrats, and especially Sleepy Joe Biden. We can't make this stuff up. Before we get started, please hit subscribe. Give us those 5-star ratings. We are surging in the charts and growing so quickly thanks to you. And get one other person to do the same. Please press subscribe and leave us those 5-star ratings. This is your home for rational, conservative, and libertarian thinking. I'm Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. As the month of August continues on, the action across the sports world continues to heat up. Just today, I was on a football field throwing 50-yard all the way down. You could see it on my Instagram. People thought it was fake. They thought it was a conspiracy. Then I actually put out the Zapruder film equivalent of me throwing 55 yards as a spiral. NFL preseason is back. If you're not excited, I doubt your patriotism. I'm half kidding. Because if you're an American, you love football. And if you love football, you love America. It's just that simple. There's only one place that has you covered, only one place that we trust for you to get engaged this upcoming NFL season and the remainder of Major League Baseball is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code podcast1 for a 50% welcome bonus. In fact, I just had this discussion today. I'm looking at this very interesting book about Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols played, of course, for the St. Louis Cardinals and now the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I always get that name confused. Anyway, the Cubs are going to the World Series, so you guys should go bet on that and go put your money there. NFL preseason is underway. Look, I have been told that the opener of the season is Green Bay versus the Bears. That's amazing. In fact, I find that hard to believe. I thought it's always the winner of the Super Bowl that's the opener. That surprises me. Anyway, no matter what it is, you guys have got to start getting engaged, getting involved. BetOnline.ag have you guys totally covered. The Bears are going to win the Super Bowl. The Cubs are going to the World Series. And if the Bears don't, the 49ers will, because Jimmy Garoppolo is quarterback of the 49ers. And I've known Jimmy almost my whole life. And I played high school sports against him. Total star. 49ers are my dark horse to do amazing. Rams won't win more than 10 games. If you think I'm crazy, don't just say it. Put your money where your mouth is. Go to BetOnline.ag right now. Go to betonline.ag. You could text BETNOW to 238669. That's bet now, BETNOW to 238669 to receive a 50% welcome bonus. Major League Baseball has only 2 months left in the regular season. NFL preseason is in week 2. Get in on all the action. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So before we get into our exclusive interview with my friend Jared Kushner and senior advisor to the President of the United States, which I just want to say before this interview, we are so honored that Jared Kushner took his time to come to our Turning Point USA Teenage Student Action Summit, tpusa.com. Jared has become a friend. Jared is a total patriot. He has done so much more for this country than the media will ever give him credit for. He is a brilliant thinker. He's a strategic planner, and he has a wonderful team around him. And I just have to say that the country needs more people like Jared. Jared Kushner has been amazing to Turning Point USA. He's been amazing to our organization. I'm just so honored to call him a friend. And guess what? He doesn't do a lot of media interviews. I mean, Jared will do an interview every couple months, if that. And so for him to sit down with us at Turning Point USA and on the Charlie Kirk Show is extraordinary, and there's some exclusive insight that you're going to hear in just a moment. But, you know, when I was planning out this show with Mr. Producer, you know, I just couldn't resist not mentioning some of the news over this weekend that came at the Iowa State Fair. And beware the Iowa State Fair is my whole piece of advice to any person running for political office. I actually went to the Iowa State Fair in the summer of 2015, and I was a casual observer. And for those of you that know my history in the Republican primary in 2015 and 2016, I was a Ted Cruz guy. I was first a Walker guy, then a Ted Cruz guy, and then eventually Donald Trump. Never against Donald Trump and never anti-Trump, but I was a Cruz guy. And so I went there to support Ted Cruz. And you see some bizarre stuff at the Iowa State Fair, let me just say. The deep-fried butter to cows made of butter to corn dogs. And I'll never forget that there were people there that were lined up. I said, what are you guys all lined up for? And most politicians go to the Iowa State Fair to walk through the booths and to walk through the aisles to go be a man or a woman of the people. And Ted Cruz did that. And there was this whole line. I said, what are you lined up for? And they were lined up to go try and get their child a chance to go ride on Donald Trump's helicopter. So Donald Trump was giving kids a ride on his helicopter, which actually was pretty brilliant and amazing marketing strategy. So I kind of have a pretty good idea of how the Iowa State Fair works. I was pretty struck by deep fried Oreos. Deep fried Oreos really kind of stuck in my memory. Joe Biden, when you're over a certain age and you're running for political office, age does become an issue. For President Trump, I wrote an op-ed for Breitbart.com. I actually make the argument that it's the curious case of Donald Trump. For any of you that has seen the movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, it's almost as if that Donald Trump is getting younger throughout this presidency. He has more vibrancy and more just more energy and more spirit, it seems, than even the day that he took office or when he was running. Joe Biden, the exact opposite. Bernie Sanders, the exact opposite. But Joe Biden in particular. I mean, Joe Biden's getting up there in age. I mean, Joe Biden is late 70s. So yes, age does become an issue. And with President Trump, again, it becomes no issue whatsoever. Despite President Trump, guess what? Being the oldest president in the history of the country. Did you know that? President Trump is the oldest president in the history of the country. He doesn't act like it. He sure doesn't talk like it. I mean, Barack Obama looked and acted older than Donald Trump, yet even halfway through his presidency, and Donald Trump right now. That's a pretty amazing thing. Same with George W. Bush. I mean, if you actually look at a picture of George H.W. Bush, he was really slowing down towards the later part of his presidency. You actually looked at President Donald Trump speaking at our Teenage Student Action Summit. He was in front of 16 and 17-year-olds, and I say to everyone, he was the youngest person in the room. I mean, he was having so much fun. He spoke for an hour and 42 minutes. Just extraordinary, off the charts. Just so amazing to have a president who is so, really embodies the phrase that age is just a state of mind. He's the youngest 70-year-old, I think, that you'll ever come across. Or is he 71? We'll get the exact age of Donald Trump. But anyway, Joe Biden is really slowing down. I'm sorry, Donald Trump is 73. I apologize. He was 70 when he took office in a couple months. Donald Trump is 73 years old. But Joe Biden, my goodness, Joe Biden, he just seems to be the most overpromoted politician in American history. I mean, how someone like this would have ever gotten to such a high position of power without ever being chosen as Vice President of the United States is amazing to me. I mean, he ran for president twice before with two horrible presidential campaigns in 1988 and in 2008, where he barely registered at 1% or 2% in the polls. Just some quick history. In 1988, Joe Biden was forced to basically drop out of the race. Again, this was after the Reagan era and the Reagan presidency in the 1980s. Joe Biden was basically forced to drop out of the race because of a horrible plagiarism scandal. Again, they say time heals all wounds. In Joe Biden's case, there's a lot of truth to that. He was able to overcome that, run for president in 08 unsuccessfully, and Barack Obama made him relevant again. President Obama chose him because he needed an elder statesman who was obviously prone to gaffes. I mean, Joe Biden has done this his entire career. And Joe Biden is not just someone who says things indelicately, but it seems as if when he says things that are not quite refined, he's actually revealing something to us. So we're going to play one of his first gaffes, which is so extraordinary, so brazen, that even the liberal media was giving him a hard time for this over the weekend. I mean, even the liberal media said, yeah, Joe, I don't know how you could ever say something like this. And he tried to qualify it and quite objectify it. So I'm going to read what he said, and then we're going to listen to the sound. He said this, quote, "Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids." He quickly added, "Wealthy kids, black kids, Asian kids," end quote. What his addition actually makes no sense. Let's listen to the sound so you can hear it for yourself.
And the other thing we should do is we should challenge these students. We should challenge students in these schools to have advanced placement programs in these schools. We have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids, wealthy kids, black kids, Asian kids. No, I really mean it, but think how we think about it.
So again, Joe Biden said this, poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. What is he saying here? He's essentially inferring that poor means black, or poor means non-white. This is a highly racist statement, and if best, a highly prejudiced statement. Do you know who Joe Biden reminds me of? You know, every so often on the Rush Limbaugh show, Rush Limbaugh will take a call from an angry, kind of just very confused leftist. And Rush Limbaugh will take the call. Rush Limbaugh, who has the greatest radio program in the history of terrestrial radio. Rush Limbaugh, which is one of the few things that I consume on a daily basis. I got to get my Rush in. And at the very least, I got to listen to the beginning of the Rush Limbaugh show. There's more wisdom and there is more processing of the news cycle in that beginning than I think almost anything else. Rush will take these callers and you get these angry leftists. I could just see a leftist calling, "Hey, Rush, I got a lot of problems with you. Just so you know, the poor kids, they're just as bright and as talented as the white kids." I mean, you could just see that an angry liberal caller would say something like this. And I mean, he's already being accused by some of his opponents, such as Bill de Blasio, where he said, quote, "To quickly dismiss at Joe Biden's words as a mere, quote, slip of the tongue is as concerning as what he said," de Blasio tweeted. Look, I'm not going to play the game of accusing whether Joe Biden is a deep-seated segregationist or a racist. I will say that he has a very muddied history when it comes to defending segregationists and defending people throughout the 1970s and 1980s that were highly racist, and you can draw your own conclusions there. I have said that Joe Biden has a history of saying racist things, but imagine that the thing that you say, if you think that all black kids are poor kids, that's a remarkable thing to say. Just even if it's a slip of the tongue. And so Joe Biden has since backtracked and said, "Of course, I didn't mean that. Of course, I don't think that. I have a great record when it comes up to all these sorts of things." And he keeps on trying to get really angry about his record. And another thing that he just keeps on doing is whenever he misspeaks or something, he just kind of laughs it off. And the media partly just tries to say, "Oh, that's just Joe being Joe." But no, these gaffes actually start to matter. So in the same day at the Iowa State Fair, that was not it. You know, former Vice President Joe Biden, I just want to say something. This guy is former Vice President of the United States. Can we stop treating him as if he's a first-time candidate? I mean, this guy has been in politics for 40-plus years. So then Joe Biden, later on, confused, this is one of my favorite, Theresa May with Margaret Thatcher for the second time. Also during the Asian and Latino coalition event. Just so you understand, that's where Joe Biden was speaking earlier. Let's just make something perfectly clear. Maggie Thatcher and Theresa May are so fundamentally different. One was a coward and one was a courageous leader. Maggie Thatcher, courageous leader. Theresa May, coward. And guess what? How he confuses this is absolutely extraordinary. And he's done this before. The previous mix-up occurred at a fundraiser in May. And so just so we know, Thatcher died in 2013, and Theresa May served as British Prime Minister recently. So it's a really big warning sign. He keeps on concerning these things. And the third gaffe that he made, I mean, my goodness, this is number three. He said this: "Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. Even his supporters know who he is. We got to let him know who we are. We choose unity over division. We choose science over fiction. We choose truth over facts." We choose truth over facts? No, truth is facts. Facts are truth. Is that what he's saying? Does he have his alternative truth? Is that what he's trying to say? We choose truth. So he chooses his truth. Is he a postmodernist now, Mr. Producer? Is that right? No, I choose my truth. I choose my truth as Joe Biden. I don't choose your facts. I don't care if it's the lowest ever black unemployment rate, the lowest ever Latino rate, low unemployment rate, the lowest ever Asian American unemployment rate, the lowest ever black poverty rate. I don't care that ISIS is completely obliterated and destroyed. My truth says America's going in the wrong direction. Is that what he said? President Trump responded by saying, quote, "Joe Biden just said, quote, we believe in facts, not truth. Does anybody really believe that he is mentally fit to be president? We are, quote, playing in a very big and complicated world. Joe doesn't have a clue." Mr. President, this is one of your best tweets you have done recently. You're totally right. We are playing in a very big and complicated world. My goodness, former Vice President Joe Biden, if you're confusing Maggie Thatcher with Theresa May, are you really fit to be President of the United States? And isn't it amazing this is the very same thing they always try to attack President Trump on, that he's dazed and confused and that he doesn't have the mental capacity? Did you know that President Trump actually took a mental fitness test and he aced it with flying colors? Joe Biden should have be forced to take that very same test. Actually, Mr. Producer, that's a tweet that I want to send out. I want to challenge Joe Biden to take the very same mental fitness test that President Trump basically aced. Gaffe, the next gaffe, which was so extraordinary. This is all in one day. This is all in one day. This is just one day in Joe Biden. Remember, back in the debate, he called Cory Booker, President Cory Booker. I mean, he's just all over the place. He said, quote, "Those kids in Parkland came up to see me when I was vice president," Biden said. No, they didn't. Parkland happened last February 2018. You were former vice president. Actually, former vice president for quite some time. Parkland happened while Donald Trump was president. I tweeted, and the tweet got a lot of traction, quote, "Joe Biden just said he was vice president during the Parkland shooting. He wasn't. But he was during Charleston, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Orlando, San Bernardino, and 27 other mass shootings. Yet no one blames his administration for these attacks. Why do Democrats get away for blaming Trump?" And now the fourth gaffe, which might be my favorite out of all of them, one that is close to my heart, and one that went totally viral, actually. So Turning Point USA, we had a Turning Point USA booth at the Iowa State Fair. And as a 501c3, we don't engage with political candidates. We don't get involved in political campaigns. We stay strict on education and the advocacy and fighting America's culture war. But some of our students that were there helping man the booth on their own personal time when they weren't manning the booth, they said, "Hey, we're at the Iowa State Fair. Why don't we go approach some of these students?" And they took their iPhones, not affiliated as an official project of Turning Point USA. One of our students decided to go up to Vice President Joe Biden. By the way, they went up to a lot of candidates after Joe Biden. This kind of lit the fuse. And this amazing young student, again, Rush Limbaugh did a whole segment on this. The audio is really, really hard to understand. So I'm just kind of going to walk you through it, so I don't have to put you through the audio. But one of our Iowa Turning Point USA chapter leaders named Katie goes up to former Vice President Joe Biden and asks a question that we at the Charlie Kirk Show really ask. And I think Katie actually listened to our previous episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. And she was inspired to ask former Vice President Joe Biden, "How many genders are there, former Vice President?" I have to just give Katie an amazing amount of credit. If you look at the actual video, which we can't show you right now, she snaked her way through the crowd in an amazing way. Would you agree, Mr. Producer? It was like a magic trick. I mean, Joe Biden was literally just surrounded by press and security and journalists. And out of nowhere, Katie, the Turning Point USA student on her own personal time, just sneaks out of nowhere and she pops up next to the vice president. It's amazing. And she asks him, "Excuse me, former vice president, how many genders are there?" And he kind of pauses as if he's thinking or he's just kind of a little slow. And he says, "At least three." He says, "At least three." This is radical stuff. I mean, this is, you think the Midwestern values, we will appreciate or respect the fact that Joe Biden says at least three? And then she says an amazing follow-up question, Katie, Turning Point USA superstar. "Well, what are they?" And then he kind of ignores it and she walks away. And then the real kicker happens. Joe Biden grabs her by the arm. If you watch this video, it's really kind of creepy. Like, why would he grab a young woman's arm? And then he says something about marriage. He says something about, like, "I was the first one to support marriage, just so you know." And actually, I'm forgetting something. He also said, "Don't mess with me, kid," when she asked, "What are they?" Yeah, that's really nice. He's a really cheerful person. My gosh. So not only did former Vice President Joe Biden have a serious gaffe with, I don't know if it's a gaffe, though. I have to rephrase this, Mr. Producer. Is it a gaffe or is it just his radicalism being revealed? Did he say something he didn't really believe? I think here's what happened. Former Vice President Joe Biden got stopped by a Turning Point USA student, and you could just hear he paused because he was probably going back to some of his boot camp sessions with his super woke social justice warrior staffers that he's overpaying for his campaign, where they say, now former vice president, when you get asked about transgender issues and you get asked about gender, we're going to kind of take the three-gender stance because that's the stance that United Airlines takes, and that's just the right stance. And it's male, female, and kind of transgender questioning. So you kind of probably, he was trying to think back to his woke social justice boot camp, the woke social justice training that he got by all the by his very far left-wing staffers. You could just imagine he was going back. He was trying to think, boy, what am I supposed to say? At least three. If we had any form of an honest media, they would immediately follow up to the Joe Biden campaign with a formal question saying, what are the three genders? And if you say at least three, are you opening the door to more genders? And as we talked about in our previous podcast, There Are Only Two Genders, which I encourage everyone listening to this podcast right now, please go download and listen to that podcast when you have time, at a time of your choosing, because we really go through the entire transgender argument and the entire two-gender argument, and we pick it apart and we deconstruct it piece by piece and bit by bit. So not only did Vice President Joe Biden say something unbelievably radical, I actually think former Vice President Joe Biden believes when this wasn't an issue and we didn't actually try to make discussion political topics over things that honestly should not be discussed whatsoever. I think deep down Joe Biden actually believes that there are only two genders, and he's disgusted that he has to even be asked about this and be put on the record about this. But remember, in the second presidential debate, Vice President Joe Biden, as I mentioned, called Senator Cory Booker the future president. He called the Trans-Pacific Partnership the TTP, not the TPP. And he totally botched his closing statement and went viral, Joe 30330. And again, if you're looking for another podcast to listen to, please go back and listen to our Joe 30330 podcast. I might be botching it, but it's okay that I botch it, Mr. Producer, because it's not my texting alert and it's not my website. So it's okay that I'm botching it. If I'm botching it, praise God, because I hope I'm not getting the Joe Biden text alert correctly. But he has a super serious history with gaffes. I mean, in Danville, Virginia, during the 2012 presidential campaign, when speaking to a predominantly black audience, he said that the Republican economics and namely candidate Mitt Romney was going to, quote, put y'all back in chains. In 2006, you might remember this, Senator Joe Biden explained to someone who asked him about the Indian American population. He said, you cannot go to a 7-Eleven or Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. In fact, let's play that because that's an unbelievably racist thing to say. Let's play that sound now.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
And in 2007, when Biden made racist remarks about his future running mate, Obama, he said, I mean, you've got the first mainstream African-American man who's an articulate and bright and clean and nice looking guy. Again, a very racist thing to say. And not to mention creepy handsy Joe, multiple allegations of misconduct, plagiarism, which shipwrecked his 1988 run for president that we previously mentioned, befriending segregationists and his recently unearthed position on busing, which was really an unfair because Kamala Harris actually holds the same position. So she was trying to cross-examine him and take the moral high ground when in reality she has the same position. Total political hit job and really unbelievably politically dishonest on Senator Kamala Harris's part. And we're not even talking about Vice President Joe Biden's brother who received favorable contracts for rebuilding Iraq. We're not even talking about how Vice President voted for the Iraq War and then had the dishonesty to then bash the Iraq War in 2004 and 2005 after voting for the Iraq War authorization. We're not even talking about how Vice President Joe Biden took Air Force Two, which is a government-issued aircraft, which for the vice president, he took that plane with Chinese officials with his underqualified corrupt son, flew it to China, and his underqualified corrupt son secured $1 billion-plus investment for his fund that he had no reason securing while jeopardizing national security. And we're not even talking about Joe Biden's affection and his love affair with our greatest enemy, China. We're not even talking about all of that here. We're just talking about his gaffes in one single day in Iowa. I'm going to say what I've said all along. Joe Biden will not be the Democrat nominee. He's not ready for prime time. They are pouncing at him. And as every Democrat starts to drop out, as every Democrat starts to leave the field, support is going to consolidate against Joe Biden. He is everything the Democrat Party hates. He's from an old era, full of gaffes, doesn't understand new media. He's white. He's a male. He's got no spirit and charisma. And I actually think President Trump should want to run against Joe Biden Mr. Producer, I think, is nodding his head right now. He is. I think President Trump would run circles around Joe Biden. You think he's going to resonate in the heartland with a stance that he says that there are three genders? I actually might think that if Joe Biden ends up being the nominee, this gender stance that we now have him on the record on could really go back to haunt him. I think that a Turning Point USA activist on her own courage and in her own volition might have gotten Joe Biden on an incredibly important position that he was previously not put on the record on. He's also the establishment with the left completely and totally hates. And so, look, I'm just so proud of our Turning Point USA activist that without any sort of coordination or planning, did this and got Joe Biden on the record. And then she got grabbed by him in a really creepy and inappropriate way. And we demand an apology from the former vice president. Joe Biden is not ready for prime time whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. And before you just shake this off as, oh, that's gaffes and Joe being Joe, these are true fault lines within his campaign. That many gaffes in one day and that many mistakes in one day in a visit to Iowa, President Trump and his and the opponents of Joe Biden, the Democrat primary, are ready to pounce, and we enforce our prediction here on the Charlie Kirk Show. Joe Biden is not going to be the Democrat nominee. A recent Gallup survey shows Americans worry more about burglary than almost any other crime, more than mugging, more than terrorism, more than even car theft and murder. According to studies, just over 10% of break-ins are planned beforehand. The rest are spur of the moment. Crimes of opportunity, in other words, random. Did you know that most break-ins happen between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m.? In the middle of the day, according to the FBI, the average loss in a burglary is over $2,000. That can be hard to recover from. There are over 2 million burglaries reported every year. That's one every 13 seconds. And what's crazy is that only one in five homes, this is crazy, have home security. But guess what? You got to use what I use. For the property I care about, the property that I own, the property that I want to protect, I use SimpliSafe. That's why SimpliSafe is my top choice. Hands down. Look, you want to protect your property? Say it with me. SimpliSafe is the answer. SimpliSafe protects your whole home. Every window, room, and door with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. Their police dispatch is up to 3.5 times faster because they use video verification. They make it easy on you. No contract, hidden fees, or fine print. I can tell you from personal experience, SimpliSafe is easy to use. It's designed to blend in right into your home. No wires, no drilling, none of that stuff. It's easy to order and easy to set up, and usually under an hour. It's won a ton of awards from CNET to New York Times/Wirecutter. Prices are always totally fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring is just $15 a month. So right now, go to visit simplisafe.com/Charlie. You get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go right now. Be sure to go to simplisafe.com/Charlie so they know our show sent you. That's simplisafe.com/Charlie. And without any further ado, here's my exclusive sit-down with my friend, total patriot and superstar, the unsung hero of the most successful presidency, arguably in American history, Senior Advisor to the President, Jared Kushner.
Well, thank you.
I agree. Jared is awesome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with all of you. I was here earlier watching the President speak, and I have to say, following that act is really not an easy thing to do. So, but I was riding back them after, and he had a fabulous time with you. So thank you guys for giving him such a fun morning.
It is the definition of a hard act to follow. But Jared, we are so thankful that you are here with us at the largest ever conservative teenage gathering in American history. And I want to begin this conversation with talking about, Jared, I've had the opportunity to work with you on a couple initiatives over the last year and a half, 2 years. And it's been amazing to see how much you and your team, Avi and Cassidy, get done for the American people. And so often, you don't seek the credit or the limelight for it. And we're going to go through a lot of those accomplishments, but it's extraordinary what you and Ivanka have done for our country. We love Ivanka, don't we? Have done for our country and the results you've been able to deliver for the American people. And I truly believe you are the change maker within the White House that is truly assisting the president in fulfilling his agenda. And the one thing in particular that I'd love to start to talk about is the prison reform legislation that was passed and signed into law back in December of 2018. And that's right, you should applaud that. And so let's start there and just kind of just talk a little bit about what compelled you to champion this. something that Washington decided not to do over 30 years as kind of your first big piece of legislation to get behind.
Well, thank you, Charlie, for that. And I also have to congratulate you on a phenomenal event here today, seeing everyone come together. And I never thought I'd be in politics to begin with, but I also never thought I'd be speaking at a big conservative gathering. The president says to me all the time, he says, Jared, you're too liberal, you're a Democrat. I said, no. You've made the Republican Party big enough that people like me now feel comfortable being a part of it. So, and something like criminal justice reform is a very good example of the types of policies that this president has been willing to lead on that maybe traditional Republicans have not been, which has made a big difference. So, President Trump is a law and order candidate. He believes that we need safety, we need security. I think 90%, maybe 95% of Americans want that. But when I started exposing him to this issue, it took me about a year to research it and put it together and come up with a plan of action and something that I thought he would get behind, having not had a lot of exposure to the issue. When you're in the real estate business and the show business, it's not something you interact with a lot. So we showed the issue to the president. He immediately saw that if we have all these people who are currently in our prison system, we have 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's incarcerated population. If we have these people warehoused and we let them leave without doing anything to help them get a second chance, no wonder why they're going to go and commit crimes. So we looked at what had been happening in the country, and a lot of states had this problem where they had very high costs for the prison system. And based on that, they started saying, well, let's try to reverse this trend. And they started investing in vocational training, a lot of skills training and addiction treatment and mentorship and all the different things in the prisons that would help people once they leave transition to really get a second chance. And so we took the efforts that worked in states like Georgia and Texas, and the president got behind it. And it took us a while to get through. I've learned in Congress, there's no such thing as a straight line between two points. And that the biggest thing is to build momentum, and then about 99% of the horse trading always happens in the last 1% of the effort. But the president really led with it. He was able to unify a lot of Republicans, and he was able to encourage us to negotiate a bill that would really try to help the nonviolent offenders and do something that would give people who are leaving prison a real second chance. And so it turned out to be a very, very big success. We got 87 votes in the Senate, which in today's day and age you really don't see very often. I say it's 87 with an asterisk because Senator Graham was in Afghanistan. He would have voted for us. And then we had another senator that would have voted for us, but he was mad at somebody else, so he didn't vote for us. So we would have had 89. So it's 87 with an asterisk, but it was a very, very big success. And we're seeing And we're seeing the results already, because a lot of the people in prison now have much more hope about what their future can be. We have a lot of the companies that we've started getting to start offering second chance hiring to employees. We're seeing people leave prison, get into jobs. We're seeing communities accept people. And then once that happens, the likelihood of them committing a crime again goes down tremendously from a statistical point of view. So it really would not have happened without the president's leadership. And I have to give credit to a lot of the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress, and also a lot of the people on the outside, like Charlie, who were able to mobilize a lot of support. Every time people tried to fight against the effort, a lot of people who cared for it really stepped up and helped us spread the word to explain why this was very good for communities and for our country.
Well, and it's a, you know, as we as conservatives, we should not look at any issue as just a conservative or a liberal issue, and especially when it comes to prison reform and criminal justice reform. You know, there's a conservative argument to be made that it's not good for the taxpayer to have, you know, no reentry system, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, the recidivism rates are quite high. And you're not able to successfully reenter inmates into the civilian population. So that's not good at all for our society. And secondly, you know, believing that people do deserve a second chance, that our system should be not just focused on locking them up and throwing the key away, but eventually those years will be up, and you want to have the best possible functioning system to be able to have those individuals be able to reenter society. And I think that was the focus that was put in the First Step Act. There will be a Second Step Act soon, God willing. The First Step Act, which was modeled after Texas and Georgia. I know the great Brooke Rollins helped after that. And so talk about how you were able to make arguments to both the left and the right, and you even brought people like Van Jones in on this, that were able to have dialogue on these important issues. I think this is an example in these, you know, in these divided times, if you will, as the media likes to say, that you're able to get something done with 87 votes in the Senate, really 89. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So I give somebody like Van Jones a lot of credit, because in the beginning I was introduced to him as somebody who was interested in this issue, and I realized that you can't solve problems just by talking to yourself. And in Washington, too often people are afraid to go to the middle, and they're afraid to have discussions with people across party lines, because you'll have people on the fringe on both sides who will always attack the middle. And I find that nobody roots for the referee, nobody roots for kind of pragmatic solutions. And you have a lot of energy around different fringes on these different issues. So Van came in. He was willing to take a chance to engage with us. He got criticized a lot. I mean, you had groups like the NAACP that wouldn't even meet with us. And we said, look, we want to talk to you about criminal justice reform. This is supposed to be an issue that you care about. They wouldn't meet with us. And Van came in, and he was able to see that we had a genuine desire to try to do it. What I try to do for the president, and this is what I did for him during the campaign, this is what I've done for him on a lot of the different issues, is that when he has a problem that he wants somebody to look at, he'll ask me to sometimes to take a look. And what I'll do with it is I'll start doing an assessment as to why things failed in the past, why the problem exists, why it hasn't been solved. I'll try to speak to a lot of experts, people who have been involved with it, come up with a strategy to push forward, and then after that put in place a team to try to vigorously execute, and then obviously keep adjusting as you see different stumbling blocks. And what I find with the president is that he's really more of a pragmatist, not coming from a traditional political background. He's looking just to solve problems, and that's why personally I love a lot of the policies we're pushing forward, and it's a real honor to be able to advocate for them. But in Washington, you can't get as many things done alone, and you have a divided government by design. You have different branches of power. And I think that some people on the Democrat side were willing to reach out and engage with us, and I think we earned their trust and we kept their trust, and we showed that we were willing to work together. And it wasn't really a right versus left exercise. It was really an us versus them and a wrong versus right, and we were able to say, these are the things that we think are virtuous. And I would say to Van Jones all the time, I'd say, look, I'm not as good of an arguer as you. He's great on television. He's always arguing on those CNN panels. But I said, look, but here we have good facts. And so I could argue with anybody who is against this, because I just had a much more fact-based argument as to why this was virtuous, why this would work, why this would make communities safer, and why this was also the right thing to do to give people the chance to improve their lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. And thanks to Jared, you have changed this issue completely, because you had Democrats reluctantly now voting for this because they say, well, I guess we're going to have to give Trump a win. Now, the president can take a victory lap on criminal justice reform and prison reform and show, look, this is an issue that the Republican Party has refused to even entertain for decades, and now I've solved this issue. And it gives the president phenomenal ammunition heading into the next 16 months to be able to talk about how he was able to solve these issues that were plaguing these communities. And so another success that your team was able to kind of accomplish, and I know Cassie and Avi were behind this alongside you, that I don't think it's talked about enough. I don't know if you guys remember, President Obama worked extremely hard. In fact, I think he personally flew out there, if I'm not mistaken, to try to secure the Olympics in Chicago, my hometown. He lobbied everything he could, did everything he could, and he was unsuccessful. And it got, some media coverage, but I don't think enough. But this kind of portfolio, if you will, that landed, I think, on your desk. You took on that project. And I don't know if all of you know, but Jared and his team in the White House were able to secure both the Olympics and the FIFA World Cup to be here in America. How cool is that? So you want to comment on that?
So these were ones where when we first, after the election, a friend of mine, a guy Casey Wasserman, who was leading the bid for LA, reached out to me and said, do you think the president could help us? Because there's a lot of things that these Olympic bids and the FIFA bid needed from the federal government. And so we were able to work with them, see what they needed, make sure they got everything. When I first got the inquiry, I went to the president, or then he was president-elect, and said, what do you want to do with this? Do you want to go hard? Do you want to go soft? He says, no, Jared, we want to play to win. We want to win these things. These are great to have in America. We want to win. So do whatever it takes to get it done within reason and report back to me. So what we would do is we would work with them very carefully. We'd see the way that it was going. And we were able to secure all the different adjustments that the government needed to provide to them. And they put together a great bid, and we worked hand in hand to figure out how to be victorious for the country, which was really great. And then on FIFA, that was one where the president had to do a little bit of lobbying. He did it privately, and he had me call a bunch of people on his behalf. But we were able to get a lot of people to vote for America. And I think we surprised people with the margin of the victory we got. But again, in 2026, we'll have the FIFA World Cup. We did that bid jointly with Mexico and Canada. And we're going to, in 2028, have the Olympics here in America. Both things that the president got done in his first 500 days.
It's phenomenal. And it finally gives Los Angeles an excuse to fix their airport, which I'm really excited about, which I go through far too often. And one of the big pledges of the president's campaign was to fix NAFTA, was the North American Free Trade Deal, which had many flaws. And the president seems to like to put difficult issues towards you, Jared. He seems as if he puts all these here. Can you please help address this? And boy, look at, that's exactly right. Jared is awesome. That's right. And whether it be, we went through prison reform, which people said was impossible. They said, you can't get this done. You got that done. Went through the FIFA World Cup and the Olympics, which President Obama failed on both of those. And then, boy, NAFTA, not exactly the easiest thing to redo. And then kind of, I think it was 9 months ago or 12 months ago, there was an announcement of the United States MCA, the US MCA, which is now being entertained to be, ratified, if not approved by the Senate, which is a new trade deal. And you were, again, the driving force behind that. So talk a little about the US MCA and what it means for the American worker and the wins you were able to get in that deal.
Sure. So one of the things that I believed very firmly on the campaign is there was a lot of hot rhetoric with Mexico, and a lot of people were accusing the president of saying a lot of incendiary things. And my observation was that you're not moving America, you're not moving Mexico. We have a big border and a lot of issues, and so we have to work this out one way or the other. I was introduced during the campaign by a friend of Charlie and mine to a guy who was the finance minister at the time of Mexico. We met up and he said, look, the president keeps talking about the fact that he doesn't want illegal drugs and illegal people coming into the country. He said, I don't want illegal guns and illegal cash coming into our country. And, you know, the president doesn't like NAFTA. He thinks it's a bad deal. We think it has to be modernized as well. And there's a lot of changes that we'd like to engage with you to try to make. He also said to me at the time, he said, look, I heard the first thing the president said in the campaign when he announced, but I've also heard him say many times, I love the Mexican people. I have a lot of friends who are Mexicans. I don't blame the Mexican government. I just think that their politicians are smarter than ours. And he says, as a Mexican politician, I appreciate that statement. He also said to me he thought Trump was going to win, and he didn't want to see Mexico and America not have a link in the event that that was the case. So we worked with Luis. We were able to get the trip going down to Mexico during the campaign, which surprised a lot of people. On that trip, there was about 30 different ways that the government could have screwed us. And there was a lot of details that really had to get worked out, and they were held their word in every way, shape, or form. We worked with them very closely. We built a lot of trust through that experience, and I worked very closely with Ambassador Lighthizer, who really is one of the most brilliant people I've ever worked with. He's a fabulous trade representative. He knows the issues technically, and we really worked with the president to design what type of deal he thought would be appropriate to make sure that the auto manufacturing stopped moving factories down, that we brought a lot of jobs back. And I think that the estimates on this deal is that it would bring about 80,000 jobs back to America in the auto and thank you. And that's just in the auto and auto parts sectors, about 80,000 jobs. We think it could add as much as a half a point to GDP a year. Wow. And it's something that really will have a tremendous impact. And we think it could be about 500,000 jobs in total. We did a lot of work to open up export markets for our industries and really created a deal that I think sets a lot of standards for environment. People talk about the president and the environment. We have the strongest environmental protections ever put into an international trade deal in the USMCA, and that's a very, very big point. Thank you. And I'll just say this on trade, which is that for me, again, my businesses were more local when I got into this, so I really had to study trade, and I was lucky to have a mentor in Bob Lighthizer, who has been doing this for 50 years. And what I learned is that the president's view on trade, which has been counter to what the mainstream is, really is the right viewpoint. And what I say to people is they say, when people say deficits don't matter, I say, well, look, every country I'm dealing with doesn't want to have one, so if they don't matter, why don't these guys mind having them? And then if all the things that we're trying to get from these countries aren't good things, then why are the other countries trying so hard not to give them up to us? And what I find is that The world order after World War II was built upon America was the wealthiest nation in the world, and we basically made an asymmetric deal where we would protect everybody and give them asymmetric market access to the U.S. so that we could help build them up and build liberal allies, not liberal in the liberal conservative sense, but you know, liberal versus fascism. And we would build up these allies, and over time we would share the burden. Around the 1980s, we probably should have rebalanced some of these relationships as you know countries like Japan and Germany went from ravaged countries to now very strong countries and very good allies over time, so it worked. But we didn't do that. And I think that what happened in this country, and this was a big theme on the campaign that I probably didn't even appreciate as much during the time, is that the impacts of globalization, the benefits are really distributed. So, you know, if you start making global supply chains, the cost of a T-shirt for everyone will go down by a dollar, but you'll have very concentrated costs. And so a lot of the inner cities where there used to be manufacturing and factories, you'd have a steel factory shipped from Baltimore to China. And then all of a sudden, you have 1,000 jobs go away. Half the people will find new jobs. Half the people won't. Some of the people get onto welfare programs. Some of the people get addicted to drugs. Some of the people go into crime. And then the trickle-down effect that it has on their families and their communities and their societies is rather large over time. So I do think that what the president's been fighting for is to make sure that we're keeping our industry here. We're bringing more jobs to America. We're making America the most competitive country in the world, which we're succeeding at. We lowered the corporate tax rate. We're reducing regulations. We're now energy independent. We're fixing these trade deals. We're appointing conservative judges. And I think that the stuff that we can hopefully do on immigration and infrastructure, and also the work we're doing to invest in artificial intelligence, quantum computing, synthetic biologies, all this forward-looking stuff that will really be a big impact in keeping America as the leading country in the world for the next half century, and that's really what we're trying to set up. So it's been amazing to work with the president and his team, and we really do have a phenomenal group now, and I think the president's policies are working. Everywhere we go around the world are... Thank you.
And another one of those that I want to highlight that I know your team and you were instrumental behind is the opportunity zones and the tax bill. I don't think we talk about this enough. President Trump signed the largest tax cut in American history, which we should celebrate as conservatives. You can keep more of our own money. And part of that tax bill was not just getting rid of the individual mandate, which was a tax on all of you, but it was also it was in there was a tax benefit, in fact, a tax incentive for businesses and for investors to put money into the inner cities. I know Jerron on your team was working really hard on that. You want to talk just for a second about what that's going to mean for some of these urban communities that have been impoverished for far too long and some of the revitalization we've already seen take place?
Sure. Well, the president really gets credit for this. I mean, the way that he was able to navigate through the tax negotiation and then get opportunity zones added on at the end was really a phenomenal effort. And if you look at the tax bill, that was something that was created by Kevin Hassett and Sean Parker, and they worked very closely with Tim Scott. And it's an idea that incentivizes investors to invest in the most underserved, poorest communities in America. And if you think about what the president's been able to do, he said that when he ran for president, he wanted to be a president for all Americans. And you know, he wanted to make sure that he was fighting very, very hard for those who were most vulnerable and in the toughest areas and are the toughest situations. And if I look at what I call the president's prosperity agenda, where he's really focused on creating more choice in the school system, he's focused on opportunity zones, bringing a lot of capital into communities that were underinvested, figuring out how to do the workforce training work that he mentioned earlier that Ivanka's been leading, figuring out how do you get people to start growing in their jobs and be trained for the jobs of tomorrow. You think about the deregulation, you think about what we did with criminal justice reform and reentry training and second chance hiring. We're really seeing a whole suite of policies that are geared towards people who are not traditionally Republican voters, but policies that I believe empirically will help people improve their lives in all areas. And what we are seeing now is that many people who are out of the workforce are joining the workforce. Wages are rising for the people who are the lowest earners. They're rising at the fastest rates. We have more open jobs in this country than people in the workforce looking for work at this time, which really has not happened in a very long time. I actually remember when I was graduating college, a lot of my friends had trouble finding jobs in different places, and there was a big talk, well, we'll be able to get jobs. And now, I mean, if you're graduating college, there's probably never been a better time to be doing it. You have people competing to find talent, and if you do a good job and you study hard and you work hard, you've got a lot of employers who are dying to hire you guys, and that's a very, very exciting notion. And that's what this country should be about, opportunity for everybody.
Absolutely. And as if you don't have enough already on your plate, you're obviously working on the Middle East peace plan. And also, in addition to that, you also have a new immigration initiative that you've undertaken that will protect our borders, recognize our sovereignty, be pro-growth, and put more and have more legal immigrants, because we love legal immigration. And considering your remarkable track record getting the impossible done, maybe you can get the impossible in immigration done, because our country sorely needs it. So would you just mention for a second just about your immigration proposal and kind of some of the challenges you see coming ahead with that?
So between the Middle East peace process and immigration, I'm not sure which is a harder task that my father-in-law has asked me to work on. But to be honest, these are both big problems. And what I admire about this president is that he doesn't want to ignore hard problems. He wants to try to attack hard problems with logical solutions. Immigration is something that, again, the president asked me after we got criminal justice reform done. He says, look, give this a try. Help me build a plan. I have had a lot of people talking about plans, but nothing has been in the vein of what I've wanted to push forward. So what I did is I went back to all the president's speeches and his words, and I spent a lot of time with him understanding exactly what he wanted. And I saw that on the right, immigration usually got attacked because they said that the immigrants coming in will lower your wages, and the security proposals you're putting together are not good enough. And so what we did is I said, well, we can construct those. So the first thing we did is we met with all the border security folks, and we said, what do you need to fully secure our country? And they came up with a whole set of rule changes, regulations, where they need physical barrier. The ports of entry seems to be a pretty bipartisan effort to make sure that every car, piece of cargo, person, good coming into this country is fully scanned. And I think that's something that we should want just from a national security point of view. So we came up with a really, really good border security plan that I do believe should be something that would really make sure that the amount of illegal everything coming into our country would reduce dramatically, keep us all much safer. The next thing, though, was on the merit-based immigration system. And so what we did there was we looked at the proposal that they had in 2013. There was three last attempts. You had 18, 13, and 6, and we studied all of those to try to understand why they fell apart. If you look at the merit system from 13, we thought that that was actually a decent start. Then we looked at what Tom Cotton did with the RAISE Act, which also had a lot of good elements to it. And what we tried to do is figure out, based on Canada, Australia, New Zealand, what would be a merit-based system that would encourage the smartest in the world to want to be here, but not just based on smarts, based on open jobs. So, for example, if you want to be a welder or an electrician, these are well-paying jobs that we don't have enough of today. Those count in our system. It's not just for PhDs. It's for people of all vocations based on the job availability and weighted by the different state average salaries that we have in the country. So we put together a system that I think is quite good. It's a very detailed proposal, and we're going to push forward with it. But what I find in politics, and this is probably in discourse as well, I'm not on Twitter because I find that there's a lot on Twitter that's probably not the happy people are not usually on Twitter, I find. But what I find is that people in politics are very quick to say what they're against. And if I could give you one hope and message, it's that what you should be articulating is what you're for. And I think that that's a much more constructive place to be. America, I have to tell you, working for this country has been the greatest honor of my lifetime. And serving this president and seeing the amount of change that he's putting on and the people that we're impacting, I see the people who are getting second chances now because of the legislation we passed or some of the pardons that the president's done. And I realize that there's so much power from Washington to effectuate good. There's also a lot of nonsense in Washington. And what we have to do is figure out how not to be a part of the nonsense, how not to be a part the destructive behavior, which really where people are saying what they're against. I think it's just critical to be for things, and that's what I've always tried to do. Stay positive, focus on the people, understand why you're here, and see if you can focus on what the results are and try to deliver them for the American people. And I just have to say this. You know, you hear all the noise, you see all different types of things, but I always say that those are the waves above the sea. If you go underneath the water, you'll see that there's a lot of great work going on right now by a lot of very talented people who have given up a lot to come into this government. and they're just getting a lot of things done. And when the whole show is over and the president's done with his term, people will look back and say it was a magnificent amount of progress that's been made for our country, and I think our country will be better off for many, many years because of that.
Yeah. Well, Jared, it's a historic presidency, and there's so much happening that the media does not cover, and you are behind so much good that is happening for our country. And we only covered a little bit of it. And I know that I speak for everyone in this room. Just thank you to you and Ivanka for all that you go through for our country, because these people would much rather see this presidency fail than America succeed. And you're delivering fronts, you're building successes on every single front. And you got some big ones in front of you, obviously, and you have, you know, all of our support in any way that you can pass this policy for the good of our country. And you're effectuating such great change for the American worker, for our generation, and for future generations to come. And so, Jared, thank you so much for your time today. It's just such an honor to have you.
Thank you.
What an amazing conversation that was with Jared Kushner at our Turning Point USA Teenage Student Action Summit. Please go to our website, tpusa.com, to get engaged, get involved, learn more. Donate anything you can. We want you guys engaged in our fight. And right now, please press subscribe. Please get your friends to do the same. Please find one friend that subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Tell them about this program. This program is taking off like you wouldn't believe. We're seeing these numbers. We're blown away by how many of you are listening. We are in the top conservative podcast in the world, thanks to you guys. And it's because you leave those reviews, you press subscribe, and you give us those 5-star ratings. That boosts us, so that there are more organic listeners. So the more you guys rate this program, and you could subscribe just once, you can get other people to subscribe. But the more you do that, that is a free of charge way you could support this show, support The Charlie Kirk Show, outside of supporting our sponsors, which we really want you guys to do. But the more you guys do that, the more it boosts our show in the charts, and then more people see our show. Because people go through the charts and they say, huh, I'm interested, and they see this thing called The Charlie Kirk Show. They press that show and they'll listen. So the more you guys do that, it more boosts us, helps us out tremendously. Again, tpusa.com. That's the mothership of all good things for freedom fighting in the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. Till next time, this is Charlie Kirk of The Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Signing off. Give us that subscribe. Tell a friend about our show. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest podcasts.